Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Ramble Meets with me, Luke Moore. Today I am joined by a stalwart broadcaster, a legend, and not just in his own lunchtime, Mr. Mark Chapman.
Stalwart makes me sound quite old.
Should I use your full name, Five Live Sports, Mark Chapman?
No, just Mark Chapman will do. That's great.
Great. It is a pleasure to have you here, Mark. I mean, I do say that to everyone, but it's a genuine pleasure this time around, honestly.
Do you practice your sincerity?
We have to, don't you?
Yeah, you do.
You want the idea is to go away, everyone thinking you're a nice person.
Yes.
Otherwise, you'll get no work at all. Mark, it's great to have you here.
Thank you.
Everyone will know you very, very well from every single TV and radio show in history. So there's no introduction needed there. But why don't you tell us a bit about how you came to be the broadcaster you are today, where you started, all the rest of it. Before you do, though, I think, I might be mistaken in this, but I think I used to have a job working in a car park in the booth. Right. And what I used to have to do for a supermarket was check people's receipts as they came out to make sure that they paid to park there.
And so that they'd spent enough in the supermarket to make sure that they were allowed the 2 hours free parking.
That's exactly right. This was in about 1999-ish, maybe 2000. I'm not going to say I saw you work at the supermarket, because that's not true. But obviously before the internet, so we had, the only thing I had was this little radio. And I think I'm right in saying that you used to do the sport on Chris Moyle's show. Is that
right? No.
Am I wrong?
I used to do the sport for Sarah Cox on her breakfast show
around that sort of time.
So I joined Radio 1 in the summer of 99. So I did the sport for Zoe Ball on her breakfast show.
Okay.
Then Sarah Cox, and then I moved to afternoons with Sarah and then Scott. I used to, when there was a big football tournament, do stuff for the Moyle show, but I was never part of the Moyle show.
Right,
thank goodness.
Okay.
The only thing I was part of was a sort of budget Ant and Dec double act with Dave when we used to do shows for Radio 1 as Chappers and Dave.
That must be what I remember. Okay.
But a lot of people go, oh, you were on Chris Moyle's. I go, no, I really wasn't. I did some stuff for them, but I was never part of it.
I've fallen into the same trap.
Why don't we
roll back to the very start then? We don't have to go back to your sort of childhood or whatever, but when you first started broadcasting.
Well, I can take you back to about when I was 13 or 14, because that was when I decided that I wanted to work in radio. And I wanted to be the next Simon Mayo. That was what he was doing the Radio 1 Breakfast Show at the time.
He's still going.
Doing
a great show with Mark.
And he's one of the few people that I have been stuck for words when I've bumped into them.
Really? Okay.
When I joined Radio 1 and he was still there. But that is what I wanted to do. So I sort of persevered in getting work experience. Probably took about 3 years to get work experience around that time. Did hospital radio. And I got great advice when I was doing my work experience at the BBC in Manchester, BBC GMR as it was then, from two ladies who took me under their wing, showed me the ropes and said, whatever you do, if you go to university, further education, do what you enjoy and what you're good at. Mm-hmm. Don't worry about doing media studies or journalism or anything like that. It was best advice I ever got. I went to university and did French and business studies, lived in France for a year as part of that. And then eventually did a postgrad about a mile from here where we're doing this interview at City University in London.
Okay.
Did that in broadcast journalism. And then when I came to apply for jobs in sport, whilst doing that course, there was nothing doing. So I became a continuity announcer at the Beeb, because at the time in 96, they were looking for one northern voice to appeal to the whole of the north. Because as you know, a Mancunian accent goes down very well in both Leeds and Liverpool.
Yeah. Well, you've got to remember, for me, it goes Watford Gap, Scotland.
And that's what it was for the Beeb at that time. So, and I got that, and I was dreadful at it. And after 9 months, I said, look, can I go and do an attachment? I want to go on, which you can at the Beeb. There was a chance to be a cricket reporter in the northeast and cover Durham home and away in the summer of 97 with David Boone as captain of Durham. On away trips, I'd stay in the same hotel as the Durham team.
Right.
I would commentate on county cricket on a Saturday afternoon with no summariser for 4 hours at a time on Radio Newcastle and Radio Cleveland. That taught me a lot. And then after, I went back to continuity, did it for another 2 years, and a job was advertised to be the sports reporter at Radio 1 on Zoe's breakfast show. Mm-hmm. And I applied for it, and I got it. And one of the reasons I got it was because I hadn't worked in local radio, bizarrely, and they wanted something different. And because I come from continuity and wrote short scripts, that's what kind of, it's amazing. It's just how these things fall, I suppose. I did 10 years at Radio 1, and then joined Five Live to do Monday Night Club, and everything else has followed. Just followed on from there.
How do you? It's a very quick process. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
That's your whole.
Was that quick enough?
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, okay,
yeah.
Right.
I mean, you basically condensed your entire career down to like 3.5 minutes. I can't ask for any more than that, really, can I? How do you find? I mean, because presumably listeners to this show will know you for your football coverage and all that other stuff, and maybe we'll talk a bit more about that in a moment. How do you find covering a vast array of sports? Because I find it hard enough just doing football. I'll be honest. So. You said to me earlier that you can't think of anything worse than just doing one sport. You'd find it a little bit dull. You'd want to do a bit more. And so do you think you have to have an in-depth knowledge of everything?
I think you have to have a basic knowledge of most things, an in-depth knowledge of a few things, an enthusiasm for all things.
Are you a real sort of
sports bore? Are you a buff? Do you read all the newspapers? You
I try to read a lot. I try to listen a lot, and I try to watch a lot. And you know, and that kind of that's what it boils down to. So on Sunday, just gone, I was doing the on-pitch stuff at the Champions Trophy final at the Oval between India and Pakistan. Spent the day there, loved it. Went back to Manchester, got home, I don't know, 9:30, 10 o'clock, something like that. Hadn't seen the family for maybe 48, 72 hours. The kids were in bed. My wife was up, and I put the end of the US Open golf on.
That go down well?
I think we're used to it in our family. Mm. Partly because I wanted to watch it, and partly because, you know, it's the sort of thing that I think I need to know and I need to be across. But I look at all the different sports that I do, and I say to people, look, it's not I shouldn't know everything, and I'm not meant to know everything. And in many ways, I ought to be representing the viewer in these things. And my job as a presenter or a journalist or however you want to call it is to get the best out of the people that I work with, and I want on any show and at TV or radio that I do, sports fans or people that I meet to go, my God, I love John Wilkin and Brian Noble on the rugby league.
Yeah.
Or Shearer and Wright are great when they're a combination on Match of the Day too. Or aren't OC and Jason brilliant on the NFL? Or God, Jay Townsend on the Five Live golf coverage with Ian Carter. We love it. That's what I want.
But
that for me is the most important thing.
But do you secretly also, and be honest here, want someone to come up to you and say, Mark Chapman, you are a brilliant anchor? just sometimes, just like one in five or six times.
No, No, I mean, obviously, the insinuation there is that I've been called that an awful lot over the course of my career without the brilliant bit.
You have insisted that I put brilliant anchor in the synopsis of the show, haven't you?
That's, go on, call it that. Yeah, that'd be brilliant. That'd be brilliant. No, I just I take it. Without sounding, God, this could sound really pretentious, but I sort of take the job. I saw a great quote in the Stade de France when I was there last week for France, England, from a French broadcaster, Thierry Roland, I think, from TF1. He died a few years ago, and his quote was, "You know, in this job, you should take the job seriously, but you shouldn't take yourself seriously."
I think
that's most important. And when I say I take the job seriously, I'm well aware, doing both Five Live and BBC Television, of the people who have gone before me and the people who have done a variety of sports before me, whether that's Des Lynam or David Coleman or Frank Boff or Steve Ryder or Helen Rollison. That was the era that I grew up in, where they did a variety of sports and you trusted them with those sports. And I'm not for one minute comparing myself to any of them, but that is the responsibility I feel to keep that going. And also, Inverdale, Pugach, people who've done Saturday Five Live Sport. Again, I feel a responsibility to it. I basically don't want to be the one who stuffs it up.
Yeah, no, of course. I understand that. I think if you look, I mean, a classic example of this would be when we had, well, we didn't have, but we witnessed that issue with Richard Keys and Andy Gray. And to me, that essentially belied the fact that they were starting to think that they were more important than the sport itself. Mm. And once you start doing that, I think it's fatal. I think you have to understand that you are the punctuation to the sport itself.
I wouldn't have thought anybody, or in my head, I don't think anybody turns on a sport programme that I'm doing because it's me.
Mm.
I think, and I think in this industry you have to remember that. And I think
I would agree with that.
You know, they are tuning in because they want to hear football debate, or they want to watch the highlights of their team, or they, you know, they've got into NFL and they want to see the highlights of everything in a week. And I, you know, the moment you start thinking, oh my God, people are watching Match of the Day too for me,
yeah,
then I think you're on a very, very slippery slope. It's called Mark Chapman's Match of the Day too.
Not yet. Are you the grout in the tiles?
Yes, you are. So don't use that one. Stick with Brilliant Anchor. The grout in the tiles.
I'll play it by you. So on that note then, with I think somewhere would be fairly interesting to start with would be the Monday night show you do. What sort of preparation goes into that? Because I'm a huge fan of that show. I'll be totally honest, I'm a massive fan of it. I think knowing a little bit about what goes on in the background, it's an amazing feat. I've been lucky enough to be in the studio with you before as well, see how much work goes into it. I mean, why don't you try and give people a bit of an insight into how much preparation and how it's actually made and how you go about doing it?
Sure. I mean, I think it's a constant process from one show to the next, because it might be that you read an article on the Wednesday and think, do you know what, actually that'd be quite a good discussion point for next Monday's show. So I would say that it's not we get to the Monday and this is what we're looking at. There's a Five Live Sport production team who will be trying to get guests for that show non-stop to a certain extent, as they do for lots of Five Live Sport shows. So I don't think anybody ever takes their eye off it and just thinks, right, on the Monday morning we come in and put a show together. And then the beauty of obviously doing Five Live Sport on a Saturday and then Match of the Day 2 on a Sunday is that you're across all the football.
So you get into a groove, don't you?
You're always working. It's actually easier, isn't it? I think also the important thing is people don't listen all the time to the whole output. So I might do an interview on Sports Report on a Saturday with, I don't know, Marco Silva last season at Hull. Say, do you know what? Actually, some of the stuff he said there post-match was really good. I can text the producer on a Saturday evening, clip it, and we've got it then ready for a Monday if we want to use it as a discussion point. By the time we get to a Monday, I will hopefully have spoken to the production team over the course of a weekend, know who the panel is, know if we've got any guests. You then look at the Monday papers. I'll have a call about 11 o'clock maybe with the producer. Then I'm at home, they're in the office. They then go into a big meeting at 12 with the whole of the Five Live Sport production team. Ideas are bandied about. We have another conversation mid-afternoon, and then I'll get in about five-ish, and the show goes on at seven. And you look at seven till you want to kick off with something big between say 7 and 7:20, might even be the full half hour, and you want to kick off at 8 again with something big to give it. That's kind of how we look at it for those 2 hours. You might want. You could have anything between 6 to 10 to 12 subjects, really. But I'm very sort of keen that we keep it as loose as possible, because I never know where the panel are going to go. The production team will have spoken to the three people on the panel during the course of the day.
You don't see them beforehand?
I see them when they get in about 6 o'clock.
Okay.
If they've done it several times, there's not a great deal I have to say to them, but are you aware of the subjects and away we go? If they're new to it, then I sort of explain how we work, and you know, which is talk whenever you want to, basically.
Okay.
Now, and I say this to all panelists or guests or pundits: don't wait for me to bring you in.
And there's probably a few you don't need to say that to, isn't there?
Yeah, there are absolutely. And there are some, obviously, in the first two or three times, you've got to take yourself back sometimes and think, you know, this is either national radio, let's say with Monday night, it's national radio, there are a lot of people listening, you're giving your opinions, which is nerve-wracking in itself in this day and age for a lot of people. It takes time for people to warm up and get going. So you try and put them at ease. And I say to everybody on every show, so on the Rugby League last week, we had a new pundit in Jamie Jones Buchanan for the first time. And our briefing actually happened when we went to the urinal together at Warrington just before we went on air. Said, look.
Interesting look behind the curtain.
Well, yeah. You want the inside.
Yeah,
don't
I
you?
Do. Absolutely, yeah.
And I said to him, as I say to them all, don't wait for me to bring you in.
Okay.
The less there is of me on any show, the better.
Yeah.
Because viewers, listeners warm to it. They want to hear pundits arguing, disagreeing, debating, agreeing. And the less the host interjects, the more it sounds like a as cliched as it is, a conversation that you could be joining in as a listener if you're in the pub or the cafe or whatever.
That's right. And on the subject of pundits then, do you have a say on who you get on and who you'd prefer to work with and who you wouldn't? Because the reason I ask that is because a lot of our, you know, obviously Twitter is an interesting place, let's say, for that sort of stuff anyway, but everyone's got an opinion on pundits.
Absolutely.
Some people are hammered, some pundits get hammered, some people are really well respected. I mean, from one side, you've got Gary Neville on one end, you've got various people I won't name and shame, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
How aware are you of that, and how much of an input do you have and say, look, to the production team, we shouldn't be using, say, this guy's much, we should be using this guy more, this guy's really great, this guy's lazy, whatever, that sort of stuff. Do you have a lot of input?
I'm hugely aware of it, obviously, because I am on social media and I see what people say. And we have constant conversations with production teams, both TV and radio, about who works and who doesn't. I don't. Equally, the ones that maybe people are less appreciative of doesn't necessarily mean that they don't make good radio or television.
Mm. Just means they're not to their particular.
Just means they're not
taste,
to their particular taste. And I think you need. I think you need variety, and I think you need combinations. And actually, what we tend to do is we all know the people that are out there. We also look for different new people all the time, to be honest. We will try them in different situations before bringing them in on a Monday night. There'll be other shows that we try them on. But the most important thing is actually to look at the combinations and the chemistry. So it's more if you have three people who are all quite softly spoken and quite considered and I was going to say intelligent, but I don't mean intelligent, but, you know, thoughtful, then actually that could be quite a hard listen for 2 hours.
Sure.
Because you haven't got the punch and you haven't got the energy from anywhere. So then you need to think, well, actually, those three don't work. We need to bring someone in with a bit of energy or spark to balance that out, you know? Mm. Actually, this week, when we look at what the subjects are, it's quite a big European week. So let's tailor our guests accordingly and bring in people who are maybe stronger on European football than they are on the Premier League, because actually we know that at least an hour of the show is going to be dominated by La Liga, Bundesliga, whatever it may be. So I think that's how I look at the casting of the pundits more than what people think. I think if you just went highbrow all the time, then
you're looking at me when you said highbrow then, is that
I pointed at you. Maybe highbrow, maybe highbrow is the wrong word, but okay,
it definitely is.
If you, all right, let's say if you just looked at the pundits that are popular on Twitter, then I think you'd be in trouble.
Okay, because it's interesting you say that, because I spoke to Dave Jones of Sky Sports on one of these.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know him.
Yeah, I know him very well. Yeah,
really nice chap. But he said exactly the same as you, and I would doubt you've heard that.
Yeah.
But he said the example he used was Graham Souness.
Yeah,
he was braver. He named the pundits.
Yeah,
and. I'm just joking, but he said, "I love working with Graham. All the rest of it's a great guy, and but we know what we're going to get with Graham, so we're not going to use him every week because it would be repetitive for the
Absolutely,
people who watch, and so it's not relevant for some particular games, you know." So, which I said, "Well, Graham has won everything, you know, so he probably does know a bit about a bit." So, but no, I do take the point. It's an interesting.
But all right, let's take Chris Sutton. Okay, so Chris Sutton will divide opinion on Twitter, obviously. And you have any show with him and you get slated for having him and you get praised for having him.
Hmm.
But whatever his opinions, I know that I have a good chemistry with Chris.
Yeah.
And I know that I can kind of take the mick out of him and can nudge him and wind him up a little bit. And I also know that he will give it back.
Mm-hmm.
So if that makes good radio, you might not agree with anything that he's saying and you might think he is miserable and he puts everybody down, bar Celtic. But half the stuff he says is just to wind up Rangers fans. You might think that, but you can't deny that hopefully the show over the 2 hours with him on it will either get you angry or make you laugh or make you think in a different way. That's all it is.
I might be wrong. You'll know much more about this than me. I think at one point Chris Sutton was told to stop being so negative and then he turned it around and became a little bit more friendly. Did I imagine that?
I have no idea whether that's been the case or not.
Okay, right. Because at one point he seemed to be, as you say, just hammering everyone. which I personally don't mind. But then when I flicked it on maybe a few weeks later, he was a lot more positive. Does that sort of conversation take place?
If it does, I was unaware of it.
Okay, right.
And I don't think I'd be disappointed if we told somebody not to be themselves. Be something that they're not.
Yeah, okay.
Because that's my whole broadcasting. You've got to be who you are.
But some people need to be coached, though, right?
Absolutely. Oh, and there is coaching available, and we have somebody who you know gives out training sessions and everything to them, and that's hugely important.
I think
hugely important. And they listen back to themselves and how this works and how that works and what doesn't work. So absolutely. But I still think each pundit has to be true to themselves.
Of course, absolutely.
Otherwise, there are pundits who will say things just for effect, and they get themselves in trouble because
they can't back it up.
Because they contradict themselves.
Yeah,
you can't go on Match of the Day on a Saturday night and say they're the greatest strike partnership in the Premier League, and then the following Sunday go on Match of the Day 2 when a different team are playing and go they're the greatest strike partnership in the Premier League, when you've just said that about someone else the week before.
Yeah, no, fair point.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
What would you say then is your sort of, I guess, proudest moment, maybe, or your most successful moment in the job you do? What was something you look back on with the most pride? I'm going to ask you your worst moment in a minute, so enjoy this one while you can.
Oh, God.
London 2012, that's what everyone says.
Did I?
Yeah.
Do you know what? I don't know, because I don't...
Stop being so self-deprecating.
Yeah, but I am, unfortunately. and I don't... I mean, I think... If I was to analyse the different stuff that I do, I would say anchoring the Super Bowl is about the technically hardest thing.
Right. That's interesting, because it's such a technically difficult sport.
Because you are in the hands of a American broadcaster or a world feed broadcaster, and you never know when the adverts are coming. You never know when the break's coming.
So you're on your toes.
It can be a 10-second. Oh, they're going after this field goal, they're going to take an ad break. This is a minute 31, and you sort of put your cup of tea down and away you go, and you're off.
Right.
And you know. So I think within the world of television, that is quite a technically difficult thing for everybody to do, and you need the whole team to be really on their game for it. But that's where you rely on the radio side of it, because it's just talking for a minute and
sure,
a half
okay.
and hitting a timing to get back to the game. So I would say, I would say I feel, you know, that doing the Super Bowl is quite an accomplishment. Really.
Did you work on that big Brazil defeat in the semi final of the World Cup?
Yeah, I did. I think I did radio.
That must have been bizarre.
Well, that was we were in,
because you were in Rio.
I was presenting in Rio.
Yeah.
And where was it? Sao Paulo? Was it Brazil?
I can't remember. But I know you were definitely out there anyway.
So that game was wherever it was, and they got smashed 7-1, and we finished the show, and we came out, and it was raining biblical proportions. Yeah. I mean, it was absolutely lashing down, and we wanted to get somewhere just to find somewhere for food and a beer or whatever. And the streets were deserted, partly because they'd just been thumped, and partly because it was absolutely lashing down. And we came out of the hotel, and we sort of tried to go under shops and buildings that had awnings on them, so that we weren't going to get soaked. Well, there was me and Dan Walker, a couple of the production staff. And then three others were following on behind. So there was the four of us running through the rain.
Yeah.
We got to this restaurant, and they didn't speak English.
Right.
And of course,
how's your Portuguese?
Well, horrendous. So table were at a table.
Yeah.
And there's four of us there, and there's three coming on behind, and we held up
seven. Oh my God!
exactly.
They
held up seven fingers, and they thought, "Oh my God, they think we're taking the mick out of the fact that they've just beat that
English as well."
seven beer. All right, okay, fine. You can stay here. Thank God for that.
That's amazing. The guy loads up his shotgun. Yeah.
So it was a very quiet, somber evening. Was that? Yeah.
Okay. And we've all been, well, we haven't all, but you and I definitely would have been there when you're doing live stuff and your mind goes blank or you can't think of what to say next and everything. What's your worst experience?
I had to do a 6:06 quite early on in my, because I did some Five Live stuff around 2003, 4 and 5, and I had to do a 6:06 in the days when you were on your own to do it. You didn't have a footballer with you. You were on your own. A 6:06 with no phone lines working for 20 minutes.
Wow. No ad breaks, are there?
No ad breaks. Yeah. I could have put a record on. A record.
No, exactly,
like a CD on, I would do on Radio 1.
Yeah.
It was, I think, you know.
Where's that copy of Stairway to Heaven?
Exactly, yeah.
Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah. It doesn't get...
So what did you do? Just fill?
Just fill and just talk and hope that something comes through and rely on a few texts, I suppose, and hold the newsreader close as a kind of sidekick just to keep the conversation going.
But you managed to get away with it, you reckon? Do you think people at home would have noticed?
Yeah, it would have sounded absolutely horrendous.
The absolute king of sort of filling when he runs out of things to say is Alan Brazil on TalkSport. I'm being serious. I've been sat there where he has got nothing to say and he just sort of goes ta-tum-ta-tum-tum, right, so wraps the desk, doesn't care, it's completely unflappable. It's fantastic.
I won't name the presenter, but there was a time at Radio 1 when what you'd do is there'd be the evening session between 7 and 9, or was it 7 and 10, and then it got to the final hour and it would then go regional. There'd be the session in Northern Ireland, session in Scotland,
right,
in England and Wales, so it had to be a clock start, which would get very technical, but they had to hit exactly the time. And whoever was presenting, she wasn't a particularly experienced presenter, and she was 30 seconds late, so she just whistled up.
Wow. Alan Partridge stuff. That's fantastic. Do you think it's getting... I mean, this is a bit of an abstract question, I guess, but hopefully you'll know what I mean. Do you think it's getting harder or easier to broadcast now on such a big scale as you do, with the fact that everyone has an opinion, but not just an opinion, a platform to express that opinion? And the reason I'm asking that is because before we came on air, we were talking a bit about some other presenters who've fallen foul maybe of a Twitter storm or something that would be a fairly innocuous mistake, but it's blown up out of proportion because everyone's got a voice now. Are you aware? Because you're seen as a safe pair of hands, right? You've never, luckily or fortunately, never had anything like that. Do you think the pressure is felt more keenly now, or do you think it just washes over people? They're just used to it, so they just ignore it.
No. I think when you're in the middle of it, I think it can be hugely frightening and hugely affecting. Actually, I think you need a lot of strong people around you to make sure that, you know, if something has gone wrong or you have done something wrong or it hasn't worked out as you planned, that there are people, you know, to say, well, actually, it wasn't that bad. Don't worry about it. Mm. You know, I think it's. I mean, there are so many different levels to it. I think when you're high profile and make a mistake, I think you're going to be hung out to dry because that is the world we live in at the moment, mm. and everybody reacts to it. I think what I always find quite unfortunate about it is, for some people. I mean, we've been talking about Inverse. We've talked about John Inverdale, yeah, who's made sure. various gaffes over recent years. But what I find quite unfair for him is that when he does something, all previous ones are then regurgitated and brought out again.
So like more grist in the mill, basically. Yeah, yeah.
So Steve Redgrave thing happened with Invers in Rio.
That's fantastic viewing, by the way.
Then the Marion Bartoli thing got brought out. And it also got brought out that he'd sworn on air at Cheltenham, which is still one of my favourite.
That was like an honest mistake.
Getting rose tinted and rose coloured up to combine them to what he said one of the funniest things. But that's funny and an honest mistake. But it gets brought up in certain publications. Yeah. Oh, gaff prone, this, that, and the other. You know, he's got a 30, 40 year broadcasting career behind him. You know, he is considered, or should be considered, really, a safe pair of hands. Some things he hasn't done particularly well, but over the course of a long career, I think that could be thrown at all of us, I would have thought, at some point. I think if you are... So I think you need people around you to help you if you find yourself in that situation. I think you can't... If it's just people slagging you off on social media because... Yeah. You haven't been positive enough about Southampton. You've just criticised them.
That's white noise to me now.
Then I think you just have to let it wash over you. What I would say is slightly more, and maybe I'm looking at this in a bit of an old fart kind of way. You know, I'm 43 and I've now done 20 years in this, and you know, I've worked for I work for the biggest radio station in the world in Radio 1, and now I'm working for Five Live. There's not a lot that I haven't seen, and therefore, when the stick and the criticism comes, some of it might be justified and you take it on the chin, and the rest of it, you just sort of have to go, look, you know, that's what happens in football. People have allegiances. They're going to want to slag you off. What concerns me is the 25, 26, 27-year-old people who are starting out and... get stick and how they deal with it.
You've got to be tough, haven't you? I mean,
but I don't think you're tough. I mean, was I tough when I first started at Radio 1? I'm not sure I was.
Hmm. I suppose when you started, there wasn't Twitter and all that.
There was only text, but the text, you'd sit in front of a text screen and we didn't have text right at the start. Stone tablet. I don't think we had text at the start. When the text started and you'd sit in front of the text screen, and it would just be all these people slagging you off. So you get used to it very quickly. Mm. But it's not. At the start, I don't think it's particularly easy.
I think this is maybe a bit too technical, but I think the production, the producer is important. Like the biggest example of that is the old... they were calling it in the newspaper Saxgate with Andrew Sachs and Jonathan Ross and Russell Brand. And what later turned out afterwards, which wasn't really that widely reported, but I read it in a report of it, was that like the producer was completely obsessed with Russell Brand and wouldn't tell him, you can't do this, you can't do that. And that's why a producer is really important. You need to have a strong producer. Yeah. What we do with The Ramble, obviously, we don't go out live anyway, but we have four of us and five of us really produce it, and we all take a view on what should be and what shouldn't be. And you get a consensus, a wisdom of crowds type thing. Obviously, live broadcast, you don't necessarily have that, but if you've got a strong producer, they'll know what
precisely.
That's like almost like a fail safe, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And actually, but then, you know, we work in an industry where there are ogres of broadcasting who would bully producers. Now, I'm not saying Russell Brand bullied that producer by any means, but therefore, for a lot of producers, even though it's their job, for some of them, it's hard to tell off the presenter because they are so big and demanding and this, that and the other. So I feel, you know, but you need, God, that relationship between you as a presenter and your producer and your editor is the most important thing. I hope all my producers know. Well, they do because they do it. So you can't do that.
Yeah. Do you get a lot of criticism? I won't stand criticism forever.
Oh, sorry.
Do you get a lot of criticism for Match of the Day too? Because I know that Match of the Day gets a little bit of stick through. Gary Lineker is always tweeting about this is the run in order to die, all the rest of it. Yeah. This is why we're doing this.
Yeah.
And I think what people don't maybe understand is that, because I'll be honest, years and years ago, I used to get annoyed with Match of the Day because I thought it was really basic and really
small. Yeah, it was.
But then I sort of realised that. You know, most people don't take football as serious as me, and you know, they only get a few minutes between each game, and you don't get a Sky Sports hour.
But do you
experience a lot of that as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
because
yeah.
Match of the Day too, I'm right in saying it's purposely a little bit more lighthearted, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's a bit more. I think it's a bit more lighthearted, and we have more time to talk about the games.
Mm.
So, you know, if you look at a Saturday Match of the Day, I would have thought because of the number of games they have, they will never have more than maybe 3 minutes to talk about a game off the back of it.
Mm.
You might go to, if they've had a big, say, Saturday tea time, Arsenal, Manchester City or something, they will probably do 4 minutes off the back of that game. Now, if you switch that to a Sunday, you're looking at 7 minutes off the back of each game. So that's a big difference.
Yeah.
That's a big difference. The running order very rarely gets criticised on Sunday because there's only 2, 3, 4 games.
Yeah.
So you're fairly safe there. What I sometimes find, I mean, sometimes the analysis itself isn't criticised, but the subjects you have picked for the analysis is criticised. So a good example, I don't even need to give a team because it happens quite a lot. Say a team has won 2-0 at a so-called big team that they weren't expected to be.
Mm.
So you want to analyse the 2 goals, influential player, praise them, whatever. Also in the course of that game, one of their players was the victim of a horrendous tackle that could have broken his leg.
Yeah.
But actually was all right. The player got a yellow card, not a red card. Everything carried on. If you pick, right, the goals, the positive stuff, and then maybe one negative about the team who've been beaten at home and why they're struggling, most of the responses from the team that have won is, why didn't you do... I mean, even though the tackle would have been in the match edit, Why didn't you talk about that after?
Right.
Because we thought we'd praise your goal scorers and your team and this and that. And we're finding ourselves at the moment in a really... we have quite a lot of discussions, certainly towards the end of this season, about really, are we really just going to look at controversial incidents from this game?
Hmm.
Could he have been sent off for that? Was that a handball? What, you know, rather than... You know, look at this formation or look at this pressing. Or
what do you think people want to hear, though? Because we talked about this again a little bit on the way over. The younger generation, as far as I understand it, want to watch controversial incidents, skills and goals.
Yeah.
And that's part of the reason, not only reason, part of the reason why Sky Sports are struggling big time for viewing figures.
Yeah.
Because no one wants to watch a whole game anymore.
I would hope, and on the back of this, fans of every club will tweet in and go, well, that doesn't happen. I would hope that by the end of a season, we have praised and criticised teams on the show roughly in equal measure, that they've got as much praise as they have criticism. That's what I would hope by the end of a season.
But how can that be possible if a team like Sunderland last season? You can't.
Oh, yeah, I know, absolutely, absolutely.
It's justifiable,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yes, yeah. Yeah. But if somebody's as horrendous as Sunderland, you're really struggling. But then you go, well, actually, we've done Pickford a few times,
yeah,
or we've done Defoe, or what, yeah, you know, and I think that's it.
That is literally all you've got to work with, yeah.
Yeah. So
we got this thing on the ramble where David Moyes is now not less a manager, more sort of manager of a haunted funfair. That's basically what he looks like now, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what, and also yes, we will do the controversial stuff, and we will. The other thing that I've tried to do actually recently, or we have tried to do as a team, is, do you know what? After a game, we don't need 5 bits of analysis. You don't need loads of triangles and circles and dotted lines and all of that.
Are you having a pop at Gary Neville there?
So no. Let's just talk.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Let's just talk.
Yeah.
So, and Wrighty and Danny Murphy arguing about Arsenal Spurs and who you would sign for is as entertaining and interesting, really, as oh, they pressed really well for that 20 minutes, 30 minutes. I just think there's a place for everything, but I don't want Sundays to get bought. It's a Sunday night. Everybody's going back to work. Mm. A little bit of an argument or a little bit of fun is at times preferable to, you know, how to play out from the back if you're playing the back three.
Do you think people would still watch Match of the Day and Match of the Day 2 if it was literally just the highlights with the commentator with a little stab in between?
Definitely not.
I knew you were going to say that. But the reason I say that is
what a ridiculous suggestion.
Because this is unconfirmed, but there's been some reports that BT Sport, they've got all the rights to all the European leagues, and they may next season just not contextualise them at all.
Right.
May just play the game. Because we were talking earlier in this chat about the fact that the sport itself is king, right? So that would be a natural thing to do.
I think the sport itself is king, without a shadow of a doubt. But I think, actually, what's as popular is all the stuff that's around the sport.
Yeah.
It's podcasts.
Like the Football Ramble.
Yeah, it is. But it is, isn't it? I mean...
I wish it were more popular, but yeah, I do take the point, yeah.
But all the noise around it is as popular
part of the
as
conversation,
the,
yeah,
is
yeah.
part of the conversation.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that because you've just tried to do me out of a job on a Sunday night. But
you'll be pleased to know I have absolutely no power or sway in any of this.
But people on a Monday morning, I would hope, would go, oh, God, did you see Phil Neville, you know, let John Stones off the hook again in that game when he was dreadful, for example. I don't know. Yeah, or did you see Shearer put Phil Neville away on this?
That's
or
the stuff that gets shared, isn't it?
That's the stuff that gets shared.
Yeah, people like that.
And that's what everybody else is doing around football. So
it's universal themes, basically. It's things that people wouldn't necessarily need to have a working understanding of football to enjoy.
Yeah.
That's the stuff that gets shared, isn't it?
And also, I feel maybe I'm you know, making myself sound more important than I am, but I do feel like I'm representing the fan in this. I'm not. I know you'll find this hard to believe, but I'm not a former player.
Yeah.
And actually, I quite like taking the mick out of the pundits and arguing with them and going, "Hang on a minute, you don't see it from our point of view."
Yeah.
You know. Well, I don't get why. I'll go back to John. I don't. Oh no, although that'd be the wrong example. But I don't get why player X is being booed on his return to this club after all he did for them. Well, because he's gone and joined them. That's why you feel cheated on.
That's important.
You don't get it because you're all money grabbing footballers who move anywhere.
Do you think footballers? Some footballers who work in the media think it's enough just to be, say, yeah, I'm not going to say it would be unfair to point someone out, but enough just to be an ex-footballer.
No.
Because that's the criticism that's levelled at people.
I think
because they'll say, "Well, you haven't played the game, so you don't understand." So believe me.
Yes, and they.
Would you prefer them not to say that?
No, I don't. I don't mind them saying that.
Okay.
Because then I'll go, well, you haven't spent thousands of pounds watching football for the last 30 years, so trust me, I'm putting it from this point of view, right? And it's as much my game as it is your game. So so that's the first thing. The other thing I would say is that, contrary to what a lot of people may think, and it goes back to your point about maybe a decade ago, the football offering of the Beeb feeling more basic and maybe lazy, maybe doing the same kind of analysis all the time. Our pundits work at it now. Yeah. Goes back to the training that they get is there if they want it. The stats are there. The research is there. You know, and the majority of them sit watching the games on a Sunday with pen and paper in front of them, noting things down, with the guy who's sort of logging it all so that he can then help them build the analysis, saying, "Do you know what? Actually, I think that's really interesting." And it means that as soon as somebody new comes into it, they immediately want to do what, you know, they're not just going to sit there and watch. So Matthew Upson did his first one this year, immediately sat down with a pen and paper. He already had some ideas on a notepad about the games that we were going to look forward to. Within 15 minutes, it was like, watch this player here for the rest of the game because he's not doing what he should be doing and he's getting in the way here and he's getting in the way there. And you can see it develop. And then the guy who's logging it all is then specifically looking for that player and what he's doing.
It's a very collaborative process.
So a hugely collaborative process. And they work at it.
Speaking of players, have you ever had any difficulty with interviewing a player or with an experience of a player in your career?
No, I found Van Gaal just the hardest person to.
And you're a United fan as well.
Yeah.
So that'd be difficult for you. Like, when he was at United.
Yeah. I had to do the touchline, the pre-match and post-match interviews for an FA Cup game, and they were at Preston. And as ever, there was huge debate about where Wayne Rooney was playing at the time, and we got the team sheets, and he said, so I said, recording the pre-match, I said, oh, it looks like Wayne Rooney's from the team lineup I've got in front of me. It looks like Wayne Rooney's playing up front tonight. Mm. And he went, well, you'll have to wait and see.
Mm.
And then stopped, and that was it. And right. I thought, this could be interesting.
Yeah.
So then I said, and Herrera hadn't been playing at the time.
Yeah.
And you brought Ander Herrera back, so it's a big opportunity for him.
This is live on the radio.
No, this is a pre-recorded TV interview.
Oh, okay,
for
right,
the
yeah.
live. The live game was sure. Preston Man United. And I said, so you brought Ander Herrera back. So big opportunity for him. And he went, well, he's not going to play up front. He's a midfielder. And I very, very nearly stopped it and went, listen, mate.
Yeah.
I know he's a midfielder because I'm spending $2,000 a season watching this crap at the moment under you.
Yeah.
And all of the United fans know he's a midfielder. And what we want to know is why he hasn't been playing. But obviously I bottled it and asked some generic question that he gave me a slightly longer answer to. And that was the end of it. And they won. And post-match he came out and this was going to be live. And I had a monitor and Lineker and Roy Hodgson were in the studio. Hodgson was England manager at the time. So they're in a conversation. Van Gaal comes out. I said to him, we're going to do this live. I'm just waiting for them to finish on the monitor and then we'll do it. He was like, OK. So I looked down at the monitor again. And when I look back up at Van Gaal, he is just staring at me. So I started staring at him.
Was it intimidating?
Well, slightly. But I thought I'm not having this. But then after 10 seconds of staring at each other, I thought, I can't be involved in a stare off with a Manchester United man. So I just kind of went back to looking at Hodgson Lincoln, thinking, for God's sake, will you two shut up like get this over and done with? And then we did the interview and that was that. But I detest pre- and post-match interviews.
Right.
And I think one of the biggest problems the game... Well, there are lots of problems for me that the game has at the moment. But I think... the constant need to hear from managers is not particularly healthy. And if they're involved in European competition as well, I reckon 6 days out of seven, you'll 5 days out of seven, you'll hear from you'll be hearing from Klopp or Mourinho or Conte or... And you just think...
Why does that happen, do you think?
Because there's an insatiable need for the media to fill time.
Mm.
And that's not a dig at Sky Sports News. I mean, that is, you know, that's newspapers, that's radio, that's TV as well. And it's easier, I think, for them to stick the manager in front of the cameras every time than sort of organise a rota to bring players out. But I do firmly believe that really some days you'd be better off hearing from a player. Or do you know what? Some days just not hearing from anybody because there's only a certain number of things that you can say.
Do you think managers and players particularly have been sort of media coached into oblivion now?
A little bit, yeah, a little bit. And also,
how much of it is a failure of the media outlet to get some good questions in there?
Absolutely. Well, pre and post match interviews are just horrendous.
They're a waste of time.
I mean, I would just get rid of them because
with the exception of like Zlatan Ibrahimovic and one or two other players, it's a waste of time.
Yeah, but Zlatan's 35, 36, takes the mick out of himself and knows that he's funny. I mean, and therefore is completely at ease with doing whatever Zlatan wants to do.
Yeah.
Which is brilliant.
Yeah.
But, you know,
I can
understand Guardiola and Mourinho at times getting, you know, or any of them getting annoyed with that, how do you feel? Are you disappointed? Let me ask you about the controversial incident. You're trying not to get into trouble. I want you to get into trouble because it's good television. End of story. There you go. It's a constant battle. The nature of the post-match interview where you've probably given 3 minutes to talk to them means you can't do anything in-depth or interesting with them, really.
Mm.
We should be better at doing them, I think. I think we've got into a habit of good 3 points, that was great. Whereas arguably the first question should be, why did you go with that formation today? What was the thinking behind this, etc.? Did they carry out your instructions? If I compare it to the NFL, most head coaches there, as I understand it, and certainly the press conferences I've been to post-match, come out, stand on a sort of podium behind the lectern and give a 3 or 4 minute dissection of the game to the press conference. Now, therefore, if you are anyway half decent, you're listening to that and thinking, all right, so he's... It gives you subjects that you can then pick up on.
How long will they field questions for afterwards then? A while?
10 minutes.
Okay, right.
But then it gives you... You know how they're thinking, so you can then ask questions based on what you've heard. Mm. Do you see?
Of course. Yeah.
And the time, it gives you a chance to be a little bit more in depth. But, you know, you have to remember now, post-match... It's not just Sky, BT, the BBC who they're being interviewed by. There's NBC, BeIN Sport, there's a World Feed here, there's the Scandinavian broadcasters. I mean, there's radio. I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, it's absolely ridiculous.
They're the paymasters, aren't they? That's the problem. I mean, it's a difficult situation to analyse and sort of dissect because I completely agree with that, but the paymasters are the media companies. I mean... They've got to take their pound of flesh, basically.
They're paying.
I know they're paying ostensibly for the matches themselves, but all the stuff that comes along with it is part of it. I mean, we had a bit of a conversation about this on the Ramble a number of years ago now, where it was when Liverpool blew the title at Crystal Palace.
Yeah.
And I think Luis Suarez was in tears.
Yeah.
And Steven Gerrard went round trying to stop the cameras filming him.
Yeah.
And I was thinking at the time, come on. That's what they've paid for. I mean, it's pretty distasteful, and it's voyeuristic and all the rest of it. But that's what it is.
Yeah.
And you've got to. I mean, I've got people are listening to this. I'm second guessing them, but people listening to this are going to go, well, you've got to do a few interviews after a game. So what? You know, I'll work.
Really hard absolutely. Week,
and you get paid this amount and this amount and this amount. So do it and do it properly.
Yeah.
I think that's a fair comment, isn't it?
I think that is a fair comment. But what I would say is if they could get themselves better organised or better planned, they could probably go, right, you know, these two companies, three companies, you get Guardiola, okay? That's your interview.
Yeah.
But, by the way, make sure it's pooled and can go to all these other outlets, right? I mean, that's getting a bit broadcast technical, but you could do that. By the way, radio today, you will get Vincent Company,
and they should all just share it.
But
is it because everyone wants to ask their own question?
Of course, but how many times has there been a killer question that has allowed?
The worst for that is newspaper press conferences.
Yeah.
They ask terrible questions over and over again, and you think if you're going to ask those anyway, just send one person.
But we do that. You know, if you go to a press conference. Which is also for broadcast media, and I say one of the England press conferences, you know, and Sky go first with 3 or 4 questions or whatever. And then because it's going to be shown on the 10 o'clock news or whatever it may be, the news channel, the BBC guy there has to get a question in and will invariably probably ask something very similar to what Sky got, just so that it's his voice on the question that will go on the 10 o'clock news.
So that's an ego-driven thing, right?
Of course, but also a slight maybe an ego thing. It also might be bosses going, look, you've got to ask, you're there, we need your question on the top of the piece. I don't know, it's such a behemoth at the moment, and I don't know. Maybe it just needs a bit of streamlining and a bit... I don't know. Maybe it needs to be just a bit more grown up and then we'll all get
that's very
more
ambitious.
Out of it.
That's very
it
ambitious.
Is, isn't it?
And you're speaking to the wrong person there about being more grown up. But speaking of ego-driven decisions, you've got a new book out.
Yes, I have.
It's called The Love of the Game. Why don't you tell me and the listeners a bit about that, because it sounds pretty interesting to me.
It is.
It does. I'm not joking.
It is. So obviously, I played a lot of amateur sport in my youth, and even into sort of early 30s. And then, as my children came along, I've got three. My chance of playing sport really diminished because obviously I had to look after them and through the job. And then you start playing sport with them, and you realise that you are heading into a sort of middle-aged oblivion as your children are getting better at various sports, cricket being a prime one with my 14-year-old son.
So how old are your children?
So my son's 14 and my daughters are 9 and 3.
Okay.
And so the 3-year-old doesn't really feature in the book very much.
No.
But it's all about... we are a very sporting family, but it's about being a sporting family and being... the parent of sporting kids and how you relate to it and your feelings towards what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And are there differences in what I do with my son as to what I do with my daughter, and how I react as a parent on the sideline or in the balcony at swimming, trying not to be that dad on the touchline. My experiences of when I coached Ben's football team for 18 months in when we lived down south.
Were you any good?
Do you know what? I would hope so.
Did they do okay?
That, without sounding like I'm about to burst into Kumbaya and eat an avocado, that didn't bother me.
Okay.
I know now that that group of lads that I left at the end of this season won the league.
Wow, good.
So I'm delighted for them. And throughout the whole time that I was coaching them, I just wanted them to... Because they were only 7 and 8 when I was coaching them.
But you know when in World Cup 1998, when France won, and they got a special medal made up for Gerard Houllier for setting the Clairefontaine roof?
I ought to get in touch with Harris and Mares and say, hang on a minute, this is all my work. Yeah. Together, I haven't been there for 6 years.
Do 3 hours on Monday Night Football about it.
It's the experience of being a dad who played sport, who now has sporting kids. And it's not just football. It's Jesse doing gymnastics and swimming and net. But there's loads of stuff.
So your son is 14, you said. Is he getting to the age now where, presumably he's getting to the age now where he is genuinely better at you?
Oh, stuff. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, he is.
Are you a competitive dad?
Yeah, I would say so. Only 2 months ago, we were having a kickabout in the garden, and it was on the a Wednesday or a Thursday evening, and I was running the marathon on the Sunday, and he absolutely clattered me.
Really?
I went berserk at him. It's like you can't do that 4 days before I'm about to run a marathon. At the time, I'm thinking, God, there's a bit of me in him there. I'm secretly quite proud of that.
What was your marathon time?
4:52.
It's good. It's good just to do it.
I wanted to do 4:30, but it was very hot.
How many have you done now?
And I had to stop and do interviews for my employers as well.
Oh, really?
So they knackered me. Yeah, okay, they ruined
me. How many have you done?
I've done three. I did 2008, 2010, and now. And that was my that's my personal best, bizarrely.
This is for Click Sergeant Charity Europe?
No, that was for the Click Sergeant. I did the first two for Click Sergeant. Okay. I did this one for the Christie in Manchester.
Okay.
Which is a big cancer hospital in Manchester, because they looked after my wife last year. So.
Okay, great. And all right, cool.
And she's doing brilliantly, so that's fine. But they're an amazing hospital.
Good, I'm pleased with that. The Lovely Game is out now in paperback.
There you go. Yeah. And
it's the only reason you came down to London, which you hate. You hate, like Alan Partridge, you hate London.
Hang on a minute. All I said was, when I met you, my God, the last 24 hours here on public transport have been horrendous.
And you also said, welcome to London, where you either get mugged or not appreciated. That's Alan Partridge. That wasn't you. Do you know what? That's an important question, though, because the best broadcasters, and you're not there yet because you're still very young, but when you get into your 50s, you've got to prepare for this.
Right.
I'm the same. You're going to get an element of Alan Partridge about you. The only radio broadcaster in his 50s. How old is Simon Mayo?
Mayo will be in his 50s.
Who hasn't got an element of Alan Partridge about him is Peter Allen.
Yes.
No, Peter Allen. He's brilliant.
Yes.
But it's impossible otherwise to get into your 50s as a broadcaster, I think, and not have a bit of Alan Partridge about you. Are you susceptible to that?
Obviously, I'm susceptible to it. And obviously, you know, accidental Partridge already points things out you think, oh, actually, think about it, that was probably quite Partridge. What I would say, though, is hopefully I had the same kind of grumpy, withering, sarcastic demeanour inside me that Peter does.
Okay.
And therefore I would hope to emulate more Peter than Alan as I grow older. We've still got a fair bit of time before heading into the 50s.
How old is Peter? He must be in his 60s now, Peter. Yeah, he's a legend. Yeah, he's a legend
great,
of the game.
Great broadcast.
When I remember listening to Five Live, when he used to do Drive Time with Asma Mir, Amazing. Amazing combination. Yeah, the fact that they don't brilliant. Do it anymore. I've got nothing against the current incumbents.
But they were great. They were great.
So good together. Is Asma Mir gone to Radio 4 now?
She's at Radio 4 and Peter does a show on a Sunday evening for Five Live with Jane Garvey, who was his first co-host.
He should be on every day.
I know. But and I used to enjoy going into that drive studio with Peter and Asma and doing the trails for Five Live Sport. And me and Peter were a double act at the Commonwealth Games. We did the show together for
That's
the Commonwealth
right. okay,
Games.
Okay, yeah.
So, yeah, he's a great broadcaster.
So if you can emulate him when you get to...
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, my yeah. God, if I was still going at... No, I'm not saying he's old, but if I was still going in another 20 years at least on Five Live, God, that'd be remarkable.
So, I mean, are you happy doing sports broadcasting? Is that the future for you, or do you want to do some more sort of general... Because I'll tell you who's excellent doing more general stuff is Nihal.
Yes, he is.
I don't know really too much about what he did beforehand. I used to think he used to do One Extra or something like that.
He did Radio 1 in the time that I was at Radio 1.
But he's
so
really good on Five Live now.
I really like Nihal.
Do you have an ambition to go into sort of more general stuff, or are you sticking with sport?
No, I think I'll stick with sport.
Easier.
I just feel comfortable with it, and I have no... I'm not saying by doing what Nihal does, I have no desire to become... go into light entertainment become famous or more famous.
You wouldn't bring back Chappers and Dave then, though?
Well,
it's
of
its time.
I think it was obviously of its time. I think if there was a 20-year anniversary and they wanted us to go back and DJ Butlins in Skegness, then we might do a one-off. But no, I think me and Dave are just happier seeing each other as mates. And we're going to a Neil Diamond gig together in October.
Are you?
Yeah, I think that's...
Any chance of a Facebook Live of that? Good, you've got to embrace this new technology, that's what I'm saying.
Would that go down well, do you
who
think?
Knows?
Do
who
you
knows?
Think? You so, don't knock so it to we throw, it. No, we are... But I'm not sure. I'm not sure there's any chance of it coming back. I don't. I think if you were to get really sort of deep and fiddly, if I was to use you as a psychologist, I suppose, then I'd say I'm just really happy, and I don't quite feel the need to chase anything. Mm. And you know, if interesting things come up, then great. But I don't. You know, I have no desire to go on The Jungle or no. Strictly or anything.
Have you been offered?
Not that I'm aware of.
Would your agent not pass that on to you?
They might do. I think they probably know how I'm. What I'm.
Is it a bit insulting to have not been offered?
No, not in the slightest.
Okay, right.
No.
You're happy about that.
Yeah.
I know someone. I won't name him, but I know someone who in a similar game who was offered it. I think it was Strictly Come Dancing, and he was offered $70,000 to
right,
do it.
Right.
And he's like, no, it's not for me at this stage of my career. But he said as he got older, he would consider it. But I guess it's sort of the death knell of your career, really, isn't it?
Well, or it's the start for some of their careers. But I suppose it just depends what you want to do, really. I went on Britain's Got More Talent a couple of weeks ago.
Okay.
Which is the sort of show after Britain's Got Talent.
Right. In what capacity?
They got in touch and said, would you do it? So my agent did say, would you do it? And I could take a guest, and Jess loves it. So for that reason, we went down and watched
That's
the
nice.
Show and then went on the show afterwards. She got photos with lots of people and judges. And
so did Ant and Dec do that?
No, Stephen Mulhern does it, who is hilarious. He's a really nice bloke.
Yeah.
And you have to sort of... And so I'm there, and then I'm expected to give my views on the acts and all of this. And I think from common consent of people who watched it, I just looked utterly bemused for the hour that I was on that programme. But I had a very happy 9-year-old daughter. And I think if I ever went down that route, I would just spend my whole time looking bemused, which might be what the audience wants. I don't know.
Mark, you've been a great sport. You've worn all my unnecessary digs very, very well. I appreciate that. Thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us today.
Pleasure. Grouting in the tile.
That's you.
Honoured.
This was a Radio Staccato production.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their Golden Glow body set includes 3 clinically proven bestsellers for smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set provides spa-level results at home. Both sets come in giftable boxes with savings up to $48 and free shipping for a limited time. For 10% off your first order site-wide, go to oseamalibu.com and use code MOM.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces 3 thought-provoking questions over 3 glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously,
man. Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.